John Kennedy brought more than courage and candor to the White House. He brought a sparkling wit as well, particularly in his meetings with the press.
Your predecessor in office called himself a political moderate, said he believed in the middle of the road approach. What do you call yourself politically, and how do you define your political philosophy?
Well, I don't call myself anything except a Democrat who's been elected president of the United States. And I hope I am a responsible president. That's my intention.
President.
Yeah.
The present attorney general in post-election remarks expressed some doubt that one who is already president would agree to debate with one who wants to be president. Could you help us clear the air on this, sir, and tell us whether, if you're a candidate in 1964, you would agree to debate?
Oh, I would, yes.
Mr. President, I'm sure you're aware, sir, of the tremendous mail response that your news conferences on television and radio has produced. There are many Americans who believe that in our manner of questioning or seeking your attention, that we're subjecting you to some abuse or a lack of respect. I wonder, sir, in this light, could you tell us generally your feelings about your press conferences to date and your feelings about how they're conducted?
Well, you're subject me to some abuse, but not to any lack of respect, I don't think.
President, Vice President Nixon seems to be taking a dim view of your administration. He said in a speech yesterday that never in American history has a man talked so big and acted so little. Do you have anything to say about this?
No, I wouldn't comment on Mr. Nixon. He has been engaged and busy, and I sympathize with the traveling problems he has and his other problems, but I don't have any response to make. We're doing the best we can. We'll continue to do so until 1964, and then we can see what the situation looks like. Yeah.
Time magazine today publishes a version of the Cuban invasion in which they say that Secretary Rusk canceled the air support for the landing force and that you supported his viewpoint. Could you comment on that?
No, I've said from the beginning that I would not comment or attempt to the matter because I didn't think it was in the public interest. I'll merely state that this is the most inaccurate of all the articles that have appeared on Cuba.
Sir?
Yeah.
Mr. President, go back to Berlin. I think the American people are confused by what they read and hear about Berlin. One day they read or they're told that American officials are encouraged by the outlook. Another day they read that they're not encouraged, that they're gloomy. One day we're going ahead, the next day we're going back. Mr. President, does the real situation fluctuate that much? And as a one-time journalist who became president, how does it look to you?
Well, a lot of journalists have bad luck.
Could you enlighten us, sir, as to why you're not having these press conferences more frequently, especially as to whether anything in particular you don't like about them or anything we might do on our part to encourage you to meet with us more often?
Well, I like them, but... sort of, but I will, let me just say, I'm anxious to hold press conferences as often as I believe it to be in the public interest.
Mr. President, the Democratic platform in which you ran for election promises to work for equal rights for women, including equal pay, to wipe out job opportunity discriminations. Now, you have made efforts on behalf of others. What have you done for the women according to the promises of the platform?
Well, I'm sure we haven't done enough, and I must say I am a strong believer in equal pay for equal work, and I think that we ought to do better than we're doing, and I'm glad that you reminded me of it, Ms. Craig.
Mr. President, the Republicans are holding leadership conferences around the country, including here in Washington today, with the purpose of upsetting the Democratic balance of power in the congressional elections that are coming up. Would you care to comment on the task these Republican teachers have and with what hope they might look toward success in the fall?
No, I think that I'm sure that I don't know who's giving the leadership direction, but I'm sure they'll have a varied program.
Mr. President, a number of your right-wing critics say that your foreign policy is based on a no-win policy in the Cold War. Would you address yourself to this charge?
Well, of course, from every American, right, whoever they may be, want the United States to be secure and at peace, and they want the cause of freedom around the world to prevail. Quite obviously, that is our national objective. And what we are anxious to do, of course, is protect our national security, protect the freedom of countries, permit what Thomas Jefferson called the disease of liberty to be caught in areas which are now held by communists, in some areas where people are imprisoned. We want to do that, of course, without having a nuclear war. Now, if someone thinks we should have a nuclear war in order to win, I can inform them that there will not be winners in the next nuclear war, if there is one, and that this country and other countries will suffer very heavy blows, so that we have to proceed with responsibility and with care in an age where the human race can obliterate itself. And that the objective of this administration, and I think the objective of the country, is to protect our security, keep the peace, protect our vital interests, make it possible for what we believe to be a system of government which is in accordance with the basic aspirations of people everywhere to ultimately prevail. And that is our objective, and that's the one that we shall continue. Thank you.
President, your brother Ted recently on television said that after seeing the cares of office on you, that he wasn't sure he'd ever be interested in being the president. I wonder if you could tell us whether, if you had it to do over again, you would work for the presidency, and whether you can recommend the job to others.
Well, the answer is, the first is yes, and the second is no. I don't recommend it to others. At least for a while.
Perhaps in this connection you would comment for us on the present general as you see it from the presidency. Perhaps it's treatment of your administration, treatment of the issues of the day.
Well, I'm reading more and enjoying it less and so on, but I have not complained, nor do I plan to make any general complaints. I read and talk to myself about it, but I don't plan to issue any general statement of the press. I think that they are doing their task as a critical branch, a fourth estate, and I'm attempting to do mine, and we're going to live together for a period and then go our separate ways.
Mr. President, at the time of your controversy with the steel industry, you were quoted as making a rather harsh statement about businessmen. I'm sure you know which statement I have in mind.
Yes. You wouldn't want to identify, would you? Yeah. Would I want to comment on it?
Yes.
Oh, well, the statement which I've seen repeated as it was repeated in one daily paper is inaccurate. It quotes my father as having expressed himself strongly on to me, and it in this, I quoted what he said and indicated that that he had not been, as he had not been on many other occasions, wholly wrong. Now, the only thing wrong with the statement was that as it appeared in a daily paper, it indicated that he was critical of the business community. I think the phrase was all businessmen. That's obviously an error because he was a businessman himself. He was critical of the steel men. He'd worked for a steel company himself. He was involved when he was a member of the Roosevelt administration in the 37 strike. He formed an opinion which he imparted to me and which I found appropriate that evening. But he confined it, and I would confine it. Obviously, these generalizations, as repeated, are inaccurate, unfair, and he has been a businessman, and the business system has been very generous to him. But I felt at that time that we had not been treated altogether with frankness, and therefore I thought that his view had merit. But that's past. That's past. Now we're working together, I hope.
Yeah. President, there have been rumors in print, in and out of Texas, that Vice President Johnson might be dropped from the Democratic ticket.
1964. I'd like to ask, do you have any reason, whatever, to believe that either end of the Democratic ticket will be different than 1964?
Well, I don't know about what they will do with me, but I'm sure that the vice president will be on the ticket if he chooses to run. We were fortunate to have him before. Would again. I don't know where such a rumor could start. He's invaluable. He not only he fulfills a great many responsibilities as vice president, he participates in all of the major deliberations. He's been in the Congress for years. He's invaluable. So of course he will be if he chooses to be part of the ticket.
President, could you tell us what you thought of the American Medical Association's reply on Monday night to your proposals, your speech on Sunday about medical care, and also could you tell us what sort of reaction you have had so far in the White House to the two television speeches, yours on Sunday and the American Medical
Well,
Association?
I read the statement and I gathered they were opposed to it.
In the furor over the Supreme Court's decision on prayer in the schools, some members of Congress have been introducing legislation, constitutional amendments, specifically to sanction prayer or religious exercise in the schools. Can you give us your opinion of the decision itself and of these moves in Congress to circumvent it?
Well, I haven't seen the measures in the Congress, and you'd have to make a determination of what the language was and what the effect it would have on the First Amendment. The Supreme Court has made its judgment. A good many people obviously will disagree with it. Others will agree with it. But I think that it is important for us, if we're going to maintain our constitutional principle, that we support Supreme Court decisions even when we may not agree with them. In addition, we have in this case a very easy remedy, and that is to pray ourselves. And I would think that it would be a welcome reminder to every American family that we can pray a good deal more at home, we can attend our churches with a good deal more fidelity, and we can make the true meaning of prayer much more important in the lives of all of our children. That power is very much open to us. And I would hope that as a result of this decision that all American parents will intensify their efforts at home, and the rest of us will support the Constitution and the responsibility of the Supreme Court in interpreting it, which is theirs and given to them by the Supreme Court. By the Constitution, yes.
It was, I believe, on July 11th that you asked the Attorney General to prepare a report for you on events in Albany, Georgia. If you have received this report, would you tell us what it says and if the federal government can or contemplates action to preserve Negro rights in Albany?
Let me say that I find it wholly inexplicable why the City Council of Albany will not sit down with the citizens of Albany, who may be Negroes, and attempt to secure to them in a peaceful way their rights. The United States government is involved in sitting down at Geneva with the Soviet Union. I can't understand why the government of Albany, City Council of Albany, cannot do the same for American citizens.
President, yes. It's been a long time since a president and his family have been subjected to such a heavy barrage of teasing and fun-poking and satire. I mean, there have been books on backstairs at the White House and cartoon books with clever sayings and photo albums with balloons and the rest, and now a smash hit record. Can you tell us whether you read and listen to these things and whether they produce annoyance or enjoyment?
Annoyance. No, they produce. Yes, I have read them and listened to them. Actually, I listened to Mr. Meade's record, but I thought it sounded more like Teddy than it did me. But so he's annoyed.
President, you have said that you are in favor of the two-term limit to the office of the presidency. Now, how do you feel about former President Eisenhower's suggestion that the terms of congressmen also be limited?
It's the sort of proposal which I may advance in a post-presidential period, but not right now.
Mr. President, there have been published reports that some high-placed Republican people have been making overtures to your Secretary of Defense for him to be their 1968 candidate for president. Mr. President, if you thought that Mr. McNamara were seriously considering these overtures, would you continue him in your cabinet?
I have too high regard for him to launch his candidacy right now.
Back on the subject of presidential advisors,
Congressman Baring of Nevada, a Democrat, says you would do much better if you got rid of some of yours. And he names Bowles, Ball, Bell, Bunch, and Sylvester.
Well, he has a fondness for alliteration and for bees. And I would not add Congressman Baring to that list, but as I have a high regard for him and for the gentleman that he named. But congressmen are always advising presidents to get rid of presidential advisors. That's one of the most constant threads that runs through American history. And presidents ordinarily do not pay attention, and nor do they in this case.
Mr. President, ever since you permitted the telecast of press conferences, a great deal of attention has been paid to little things that occur, especially in the home offices and newspapers. Would you save us a couple of hours' work tonight and explain what the Band-Aid is doing on your left hand?
Well, I cut my finger when I was cutting bread. Unbelievable as it may sound.
Mr. President, just shortly after the Bay of Pigs, I asked you how you liked being president. And as I remember, you said you liked it better before the event. Now you've had a chance to appraise your job. Why do you like it, and why do you want to stay in office four more years?
Well, I find the work rewarding. Whether I'm going to stay and what my intentions are and all the rest seems to me still a good many months away. But as far as the job of president goes, it's rewarding. And I've given before to this group the definition of happiness of the Greeks. I'll define it again. It's full use of your powers along lines of excellence. I find that, therefore, the president provides some happiness.
Mr. President.
Part of the disenchantment on Capitol Hill over foreign aid seems to stem from the feeling that the administration hasn't fully used the flexibility it asks.
I don't think, Mr. Kenworthy, that the language that the Senate adopted, which calls upon me to make a finding which is extremely complicated to make, is particularly strengthens our hands or our flexibility. In fact, we'll have the opposite result. These countries are poor. I mean, they're nationalist, they're proud, they're in many cases radical. I don't think threats from Capitol Hill bring the result which are frequently hoped. Quiet work may not bring it. I think it's a very dangerous, untidy world, but we're going to have to live with it. And I think one of the ways to live with it is permit us to function. Then if we don't function, the voters will throw us out, but not to make it impossible for us to function by legislative restraints or inadequate appropriations.
That last excerpt was from his press conference of Thursday, November 14. 1 week and 1 day later, John Fitzgerald Kennedy was dead, cut down by an assassin's bullet. But his truth goes marching on.
This is Chet Huntley.